This is the Thirsty Developer Podcast, show number 3, The State of .NET with Tim Landgrave. Welcome to the Thirsty Developer, episode number 3. I'm Dave Bost.
And I'm Larry Clarkin.
So Larry, today we're continuing our interview series from the Indie Tech Fest. Who do we talk to this time?
Tim Landgrave, who's a former regional director and current MCS architect.
Great. So what's on Tim's mind?
Well, Tim really was trying to clear up the confusion about the different versions of the .NET framework that have been released over the last couple of years.
Oh, there's confusion with the .NET framework versions?
Yeah, Dave, you're a developer evangelist. You've had this discussion with many
yes.
customers.
Yes, I have, many, many times. So obviously there's confusion, we ship .NET 2.0 and then, follow that up pretty quickly, as a matter of fact, with .NET 3.0, and now we're moving into .NET 3.5 here pretty quickly. So there's quite a bit of confusion specifically going from .NET 2.0 to 3.0, and what people, they don't understand is that .NET 3.0 is .NET 2.0 with just some extra added goo.
Yeah, Tim's going to clear a lot of that up, during the podcast today, and he's also going to give a lot of advice on, which version should you migrate to if you're not necessarily on the latest and greatest.
All right, great. So let's listen to the interview with Tim Landgrave.
Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and I'm coming to you live from the speakers room at the Indie Tech Fest in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm here with Tim Landgrave. Tim, can you give us a quick introduction? Tell us where you work.
I work for Microsoft. I am a 90-day Microsoft employee, just fresh off 20 years in the industry as an independent consultant and entrepreneur and general gadfly, and so now I've come to the dark side and enjoying my Kool-Aid cocktail every day. Thank you.
So, Tim, you gave a couple of talks this morning, and it was really a part one and part two. Can you give us a general overview of what you talked about?
Sure. I think that there's a lot of kind of confusion in the market now, especially among developers, on how all these new technologies are going to fit together, which ones are coming out when, what should they be focused on? I mean, the most common question I get in one way or another is, what should I be focusing on next, based on what kind of application I'm writing or what our company's going to do? And so the real attempt there was to say, here are the industry trends that I see coming and that Microsoft recognizes, and here's how the Microsoft platform is going to kind of answer or respond to those trends over the next 18 to 36 months. So.
Excellent. So one of the things that I know you covered was the confusion around the numbering of the .NET framework. We've had in the last 2 years, we'll have had 3 versions of the framework, 2.0, 3.0, and 3.5, mm-hmm. and the numbering system doesn't really tell you a lot about, the additional features or what changed in there. So could you give us just a quick thumbnail of that?
Sure. It's interesting because the as we look at it now, it makes sense, but I think perhaps Microsoft should have kind of earlier on said, we recognize that companies have made an investment in the 2.0 runtime, and we'd like to preserve that 2.0 runtime investment for as long as possible, because that's what drives adoption, is the runtime version. That separation now to say I have a 2.0 framework and I have a 3.0 framework and I have a 3.5 framework. So these are application frameworks that expose more features, but when they execute, they're executing on the .NET runtime for 2.0. And so, this really helps with things like, I can standardize my desktops on the 2.0 runtime and know that as I drop additional applications down with new frameworks, I'm not going to have to give up any kind of compatibility or have to do, recertify applications as those things happen. So it's actually a good thing. It's just we needed to do a better job explaining that to customers.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, because of the painful migration from the 1X platform to the 2.0 platform, are a little bit gun-shy. I know a lot of IT organizations are saying that, we're going to wait a year until the new version of the framework's out. And that applied for, 1X to 2X, but it really doesn't apply the same way it does, to like just adding 3.0 functionality.
Yeah. In fact, I think that there is the exact opposite happening or will be happening now because, when someone comes to me and says, so when should I upgrade to Visual Studio 2008? My answer is you ought to be doing it on the beta. And their response is, well, we're not going to do beta. I said, hey, what if you could get a richer HTML editing experience with CSS integrated, multi-page, multi-master page, layered master page support, JavaScript, full JavaScript IntelliSense and debugging, the ability to target the 2.0 and the 3.0 and the 3.5 platform. You just go on this list and basically take your existing applications and keep using them or keep developing them. And that's really, as we talk to people looking at Visual Studio 2008, the reality once it ships, but certainly something practical to do even now.
Yeah, and there really is a difference between the actual framework itself and the tooling now. Because, right. You know, you can adopt Visual Studio 2008 and still say our standard is to only target the 2.0 framework.
Right.
So one of the big questions that I get, you know, is as we're evangelizing .NET 3.0 and .NET 3.5, there's a lot of our customers who are still on .NET 1.1.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give us a real quick, you know, here's what I would do is if I was running an organization that needed to make the leap, what tools would you adopt? You know, where would you look at locking in? And what areas would you really focus on as the key business benefits in the framework to justify a big move like that?
Well, of course, if I were working in an organization that were using 1.1 today, the first thing I would do is freshen up my resume and change companies. But given that you couldn't do that and that you actually did have to go kind of help them migrate that, as I look at this, the decision to me really depends on what you're targeting more than anything else. If you are primarily a web development organization, then my ability to take a 1.1 application and to get it running on a 3.0, 3.5, really the kind of ASP.NET 3.5 framework, that move is actually not that difficult. It's no more difficult than a 1.1 to 2.0 move, except that now I get some of these additional debugging capabilities and I get some of the new capabilities in the environment itself. So, you know, my advice to folks who are at 1.1 doing web applications today is to say you should be investigating right now how you get that 1.1 application working on Visual Studio 08, targeting the 3.5 framework. So do the 2.0 migration and then go ahead and change the environment to look at it as a 3.5 app. And you know, quite frankly, it's for the most part going to be a transparent move. That is, the difference between 2.0 and 3.5 isn't really the real jump. It's the 1.1 to 2.0. But if you're going to do that work, do it one time and then be in a position to take care of a supported implementation of Ajax and JavaScript debugging and stuff. So,
that's the web strategy, and that sounds like a sound play. What about the people who are doing, you know, primarily desktop development using WinForms?
Well, so there's, you know, it's interesting because Microsoft has done a lot of out-of-band releases of different technologies to help that group. In fact, there was a big release, out-of-band release of a Windows Forms toolkit to let you interoperate with .NET Forms and with VB6 Forms, and that's stuff that's now supported in the 3.5 release. So, you know, it's really more of a do I migrate or do I convert issue now, as opposed to before being just a convert issue, now that some of that other Windows Forms technology is out there. So, you know, I think the some of the strategy for the Windows application migration remains, which is, choose whether you're going to enhance it from the front back or from the back forward and migrate by layer. And if you can take your application and segment it by specific function, then look at creating your back end and your middle tier, and then build your front end functions out on Windows Forms. It's the I wish there were this kind of cookie cutter answer around Windows Forms. The fact is, there's so much functionality in a rich Windows form that depending on what you have enabled or what you use, it's pretty tough to say this is the formula. You know, it's really almost on a case by case basis. But there is generally learning around how to do that exists. So it's not like you're in foreign land now, anyway.
So it's not like you're exploring uncharted waters.
Yeah. There's plenty of guidance out there on MSDN. There's guidance from the patterns team on how to do it. There's, in fact, a complete online book on .NET for VB6 developers that you can download from MSDN to give you some insight on what on different mechanisms for doing that. So there's just a ton of guidance to do that.
All good stuff, and we'll try to put some links associated with the podcast so we know where to point people. Last question, so you were looking at the roadmap, you know, kind of now 18 months out. Mm-hmm. What's the most exciting technology, you know, on the horizon in Tim Landgrave's opinion?
Well, to me personally, it is the new tooling in Visual Studio around making SharePoint development and the really making the Office server approachable. Because right now there are so many hoops and things you have to jump through to get it working. It's not a technology issue, really. It's a tooling issue. It's 15 steps to enable and debug a workflow today that go down to press F5 in VS08. And so SharePoint is just, it's a hot product. There's all kinds of, you know, every major company I'm working with is looking at how they implement SharePoint and workflow and forms, and this is just going to be a huge boon for those corporate developers who want to get in and treat SharePoint as a platform like they can write ASP.NET and Windows Forms apps. So
it's really going to become a first-class citizen in the,
absolutely,
in the tooling environment. Well, that's great. Thanks for your time. Do you have a blog you'd like to plug?
Yeah, it's exactly, it's just timlandgrave.com, all run together.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. For more information, visit thirstydeveloper.com. We'll see you next time.